Welcome to all those who have joined. We're still gathering here at top of the hour, 1 minute past the top of the hour.
Begin that, if the download is started.
Yes, the dial-ups have been completed. We will get the meeting started now. We'll start the recording. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone. Welcome to today's at-large capacity building working group call on Thursday, the 6th of August, 1400 UTC. On today's call, we have Tijani Benjema, Ron Sherwood, Glenn McKnight, Maureen Hilliard, Yasuichi Kitamura, Alberto Soto. We have apologies noted from Ali Almeshal, Tiranush Vardanyan, Fatima Cambronero, Juan Manuel Rojas, Judith Hellestein, Satish Babu, Aziz Ilali, Dev Anand Teluksing, and Alberto Carrasco.
Joined.
From staff we have Heidi Ulrich, Steve McGruber, Rodrigo Salcedo and Adam Pete. And if I could please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Tijani.
Thank you very much, Gisela. Hello, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We are starting our organizing call, the capacity building organizing call, because when we held our meeting in Irish, we noted that there is a lot of things perhaps to arrange before we start the next part of the 2016 capacity building program. So that's why this call will be dedicated to the organizing things, so that we will arrange everything before we start perform our program. So the first thing I want to ask you is if you are happy with the agenda, if you want to add something, please speak up. I don't see any hands, so the agenda is adopted and we will go to the point number three, which is the remaining 2015 capacity building program. And the first point is other capacity building tools, and this is a proposal from Glenn McKnight, and I am asking Glenn, please take the floor and speak up. Glenn? Glenn, you are muted. Star 7, please.
Hi, everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good morning everyone, or afternoon or evening, whatever location. I wasn't aware I was going to be put on the spot on this morning, Tijani. I haven't prepared any slides, but I can talk in general, and then I would like to be put on the agenda for the next meeting, and I'll have some proper links and information. So let me just give you a little bit of background on some of the capacity building groups that I belong to, and just as an example, if that's okay. Johnny?
Yes, okay.
Okay, so, okay.
Okay,
so,
go ahead, please.
Okay, so at the last meeting in Buenos Aires, I mentioned a couple of organizations that are dealing with the same issues as we are, in terms of how do you get the message out, how do you capacity build, what tools do they use. Now, let me fill you in on a couple of groups, and I'm sure all of you have similar experiences. The first group is that I'm deeply involved with is IEEE. IEEE is the largest engineering society in the world. It has roughly almost a half a million users, members in the organization, and it's organized, it's over 100 years old, but they're the actual, IEEE is the Engineering Society, Electrical Engineering Society, and they're organized in sections. And so regardless where you are, there will be a section. In some cases, the sections are quite large, and in some cases, it's not as large. But it drills down into the university and college level. It has professional and academic activities. It also has something called GOLD, or now it's renamed to the Young Professionals. So they have a special outreach and section just for the graduates of the last decade, and they have active participation with the society. So when you join IEEE, you join as a member, and then you actually identify which subsection, what specialties you're interested in, whether it's in circuitry or other technical topics. So myself, I'm deeply involved with something called humanitarian technologies, and we've been doing conferences for the last couple of years. So one of the ways we build capacity is we have organized with IEEE cooperation very focused conferences, whether it's on photonics or whether, in my case, with the humanitarian technology. So how do we do this? IEEE has, the staffing and capacity to support what we're doing. Each of the sections, because of the way their financial model works, they have financial support to do these face-to-face conferences where they have their own proceedings that they publish. So there's incentives for university graduate students to publish papers, to present papers. So we had 27 papers that we reviewed and presented back in early June in Ottawa. We're doing the same conference in Toronto next year. And we have, as a result, we go after corporate sponsorship for prizes for the students in particular. This has been a fairly successful model. Now, the second thing that they have is they have a really good, from a membership point, regular webinars and sessions which are very well attended. Now, maybe I should ask, is anyone here an IEEE member? I assume that's a no, right? Okay, so some of the new people that have come on, and Alberto Soto, I introduced them to one of my associates in Nicaragua. We have a new ALF, which is the IEEE Nicaragua chapter. Those are very well attended groups. They have, they can get sponsorship to support their section, which again is another way to, for capacity building, is if there's financial support for the ALS because of what they're doing, I think this is one of the areas that all of you can look at getting support. So that's a very quick overview on IEEE. What I'll do is I'll do some screen captures of their online learning webinar model. They have a fairly well-documented training process which uses SCORM, which is a very good quality academic training protocol so that the material that's being taught is accredited. So it's similar to other professions like the accountants and insurance industry, where they're obligated as a profession to do these academic upgrades in order to keep certified. So there's an accreditation process. But I will, for example, some of you may have met LeMarie Thompson she's with the Capital Globetrotters organization, which is an Arello ALS. She did a very good paper at our IHTC event where she talked about ethical metal. As electronic engineers, we need to be aware of the different metals that are used in computing. And there is, just like blood diamonds, there's issues of rare metals being derived from the states, countries that are exploitive. And she did a very good paper, which I'll ask to share with you if you're interested. What we've done since then, we've approached IEEE special funding for her to create an online course with this material. So this is where the capacity building really works, is someone who creates a paper, there's always an avenue to go further with it. It's not just a one-off experience. So IEEE provides a venue for you to take it to the next level. So she would have submitted a paper just recently on creating a webinar. So what we've done is we've created a whole group of advisors that will sit on to give feedback on our curriculum and on the paper. That webinar will be provided free to all the IEEE members across, and they will promote it through their New Jersey office. So it's open to the 500,000 members. So that's the issue with IEEE. Is there any questions on IEEE before I move to the next one? No questions? Okay. Tiziana, you have a question?
No, go ahead, they said.
Okay. The second thing that struck me was in terms of capacity building is a group called N10. That's N10 is part of, they have a conference, and they have a conference every, for the last 10 years. It's grown substantially. The conference usually has around 3,500 people at it, and it's called NTC. It's a technology conference that is that was done last year in Austin. Just one sec. Sorry, Chris. I'll have to call you right back, okay? Okay, thanks. Sorry about that. N10 is a not-for-profit technology experts. There is 1.2 million not-for-profits in the United States, 160,000 in Canada. And what their focus is the IT experts that work for not-for-profits. And not-for-profits or NGOs are a huge sector. They have employment roughly four times the number of people employed in that sector versus the car industry. So there's a huge capacity and interest in recruiting and outreaching to the not-for-profit sector. Now, myself and one of the staff persons from ICANN attended the N10. In fact, Evan has attended the event with me the year before, and we were particularly, and myself and the strike board, were particularly interested in outreaching to the not-for-profit sector on disability issues. In the United States, there's the ADA. The ADA is American Disability Act, and it's just celebrated its 10th anniversary. We have done webinars with them. We've actually did Birds of a Feather. We were on the radio show as well. That was at the location. But in terms of capacity building, they not only have their conference, but they also have, in addition to that, they have the regular online discussion thread.
Glenn?
Yes?
Hello, Glenn?
So the, I want to do the screen.
Can you please,
yes, I'm still here.
Can you please stop touching your microphone? Because your microphone is making a lot of noise. Go ahead, please.
Okay, how's that?
Go ahead now.
Okay, so I'll do some screen captures of the N10 discussion thread. How we engage other community members. I think it's a more proactive process. I know we use Skype, but it's very scattered. I think this is a very well-organized discussion threads that they have where capacity in the community helps other members. So say, for example, you have in the last thing that I was working with N10, I was particularly interested in how organizations change the culture so that they actually accept people with disabilities and what policies have they put into place. In just a very little time, I was able to learn very quickly how these organizations are doing it. We've made a, within the last 2 years, what we've been able to do is impact the organization to really raise the awareness of accessibility issues within the not-for-profit sector, and which is what we tried to achieve initially with ICANN as well and ITALK. So we've I think we've been able to, because we actually embrace the community with the tools that we have, I think we've been far more successful. So I'll do some screen captures for both organizations on the next call. So any questions to Johnny?
Thank you very much, Glenn. I think that you are speaking more about substance than about tools. And the issue was tools. When we were in Buenos Aires, you spoke about new tools. So here you are speaking about substance, which is relevant to those other environments, but not for our environment. So please try to focus on the tools if you have other tools to propose, so that we use for our activities as capacity building. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Good feedback. As I stated, I wasn't aware that you wanted this presentation today. I gave you a good overview. I will actually detail exactly what tools they're using for the next call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Glenn? I don't see any hands. Thank you very much, Glenn. So for next, not for, for next call, we will not wait till that. You will try to send something on the mailing list about the tools that we can use to improve our work as capacity building working group. Thank you very much, Glenn. Action item development. So we go now to point 3B, which is data gathering. And unfortunately, Dev is absent, so we will skip this point and we'll go to point 3C, which is the use of the ICANN Learn platform. Is Jeff on the call?
Great. So hopefully everybody can hear me.
I hear you very good. Thank you, Jeff. Go ahead.
Okay, terrific. Thanks. Yes. Thanks for inviting me to the call. I'm actually speaking on behalf of my department, which is at ICANN, which is the Development and Public Responsibility Department, in case you weren't aware of it. But we wanted to raise some interest and awareness in a tool that is used for online learning. So we already have ICANN Learn that most of you probably know about, which is a Moodle-based platform, but we're actually moving to a very cool new platform that is going to let absolutely anybody easily make an online course in their own language, including video, interactive, SCORM-compliant things like Glenn had mentioned. And really the goal is to make it a very bottom-up tool, and so it's not quite finished yet. We're working on it, but the goal is to have it up before Dublin. But basically, I can send around a demo link shortly, but I wanted everybody to just be aware and to get in touch with me if they are interested in creating a course. We currently have a couple dozen courses on internet governance and basically anything that is covered at ICANN meetings, including what you should know about attending your first ICANN meeting. So there's a lot of stuff going on. But as Tijani mentioned, the emphasis here is on tools, and I wanted to particularly point out that this is a new, robust tool that is extremely easy to use, much easier than the current ICANN Learn system. It takes about 3 or 4 clicks total to create an account and start creating your own course. So I wanted to just basically alert everybody to that. I'll share a demo link where you can poke around, enroll in some free courses. They're all free, of course, but enroll in some courses and then get in touch with me if you have questions. But more importantly, if you want to create an online learning course, you can work alongside me and I can help you in terms of resources, setting up the course itself, finding the right people who can help you, record videos, all that kind of stuff. And basically, the goal here is to provide information and trainings to both the community and staff on basically all the various topics relevant to ICANN and the internet ecosystem. So be on the lookout for a link on that. And in terms of tools, I also was asked to quickly mention the other activities and tools that we have going on with the DPRD, which is my department. Basically, we have a goal of really doing a ton of focus on participation in the global internet cooperation and development, as well as supporting the next generation, and finally supporting education and academic outreach. So those are the three main goals of our department, and we're developing projects and tools to go along with that. So the first that you probably know about, and I won't take up too much time here, is the fellowship program. And Nora Abusita wasn't able to make the call today, so I wanted to mention for her that we're all very excited about the progress of the fellowship and how it keeps growing, and just a lot of great things are happening. And so what it does is help bring a more regionally diverse base of knowledgeable constituents to, you know, from less developed regions to ICANN meetings, and really gets them on the fast track to engagement. And in a similar vein, we also have the Next Gen at ICANN program, which we have wrapped up applications for Dublin for, and I'm working with Tijani on the process for Marrakesh, actually. So keep an eye out for that. But basically, that is bringing university and graduate students ages 18 to 30 from the respective region of each ICANN meeting to the ICANN meeting in a goal to, again, fast-track them into the community. So lots of capacity-building tools right there. And finally, I wanted to just point out the newcomer orientation that my colleague Janice Dumoulin runs, which basically is a great place that you can send anybody who comes through at large to an ICANN meeting. You should point them to the newcomer orientation, which I believe happens on Sundays. And it's a great way to learn just about anything you need to know about ICANN in person from the experts and get off to a great start with your ICANN meeting experience. So let's see. Great. Oh, thank you very much. Thanks, Glenn. Yes. Yeah, are there any questions?
Right. Yes. So thank you very much, Jeff. You made a very good presentation of your department. I am thinking about we are looking for tools to help us in making our program and executing our program, implementing our program. So one of the things that I am thinking about is anytime we want to make a webinar, can we ask for a video recording and then you put it on your I Can Learn so that people can go to this, to the link you will give, and retrieve the webinar again? Is it possible?
Yeah, of course. So basically, we could create a course called, you know, the At-Large Capacity Building Working Group course, or, you know, something different. But basically, you have a course where anybody, especially myself, can easily go in and add in any kind of multimedia you have, whether it's a webinar, you know, asynchronous learning opportunity, quizzes, text, multimedia, whatever you have. So the short answer is yes.
Okay. Thank you. This is one thing. So this is one thing, Gisela, we can record. Second point, we may also develop courses with you. I really count on your help, since you are well supported in this thing. So perhaps we may ask you to prepare a course together with us.
Yeah, of course.
For our capacity.
It'd be my pleasure.
So there is two things. The first thing, webinar, the regular webinar we are doing, we can record them. So we have a video and with a link so that people can receive it at any time. People who cannot attend the webinar can retrieve it. So they will be more or less present, but with a little bit delay. The second point is to prepare special courses for the capacity building working group with you.
It would be my pleasure.
The third opportunity. I know that I can learn that I didn't visit. I can learn since a long time. But what I know about it, it is only material on the shelf. It is not organized as a capacity building tool. is only gathering material only. So is it possible to have more or less something if we give you, for example, what we need, you may gather the right material to put them together, and they will be, for example, a module for online capacity building. Understand
right,
my question?
I do, yeah. That sounds absolutely fine. Basically working together to identify the location of the resources and organizing them into a very useful series of courses or individual course where, you know, we basically pull all of the various resources that, you know, you have, which I'm sure there is a ton. So it would be a lot of fun, and I'm sure we could build something really useful that's more than just watching a recorded webinar. We can basically integrate that into other lessons and keep people flowing to learn future things.
Very good. Very good. The only thing about the recorded courses is that there is no interaction between the trainee and the trainers. So this is the point where we cannot make this sort of thing. But at least people can know what's happening. They can at least learn from the questions from the others. So this is only. Those are things we can do. We cannot do more, I think. So thank you very much, Jeff. Is there any other question for Jeff? Glenn, yes, please, Glenn.
Yes, thank you, Tijani. It's Glenn for the record. Jeff, I just want to point out the ISOC has a pretty good success, especially people like Jolly McPhee in New York and Paul Brigner in Reston. What they do is they have a live stream channel. And it's astounding how many people follow that channel. And as soon as the session's done, it's pushed to their YouTube channel, so it's easy to watch. But what is interesting is that the number of people and the stats on people watching it after the fact. So my question to you is, do you have numbers on people actually watching the webinar after the fact? What's the statistic?
Sorry, Jeff, Glenn, was that a question? Was that a question to me, Jeff?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to step on anybody's toes. Yeah, so basically at ICANNLEARN, we have text-based videos and webinars and normal videos, and we're working on some interactive videos as well. And so we currently have about 10,000 active monthly lesson views or so and about 1,500 active monthly users. So people are watching a lot of the things. We don't have a YouTube channel just for this, and we don't host them on YouTube, so it's harder to track using the previous platform, the Moodle platform, in terms of views. But the benefit of the new platform we're moving to attracts everything, you know, which parts of each video you watched and how often you watched it, who watched it, and, you know, you can earn certificates and grades and all that kind of stuff. So it's a pretty robust platform, and I'll shoot a link out to you. But in general, we are slowly moving into more and more videos and webinars, and a lot of that comes from making this a very bottom-up online learning platform where, you know, anybody can create a course rather than having to go through me and having me create the course. This way I can help, you know, steer resources and make sure we get everybody creating the content that they actually want. So I know that was a long answer with not a ton of numbers, and I apologize, but that is one of the reasons that we're moving to the new system, is that we have better insight into that.
Yeah, that's great, Jeff. I have a number of ideas I can share with you offline if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great. I appreciate it.
So, thank you very much, Glenn, and thank you, Jeff. Glenn, your hand is still up.
Sorry, come on.
Okay. So, any other questions to Jeff?
No, thank you.
Any other question to Jeff? Okay, if there is no other question to Jeff, I will thank you very much, Jeff. We will work together offline. We will prepare the work for our series of activities. So we need to work together very, very tightly, because I think that it is a very good thing. We have already resources, so we have to make use of them. It is not intelligent not to make use of what we have already. So we will try to make use of them, and we will try in the future make our capacity building program attractive. Thank you very much. So now going to 3D is harmonizing the capacity building activities in at large. This issue has been raised by Gisela and Heidi in Buenos Aires. They noted that the capacity building working group is working in the room, and the RALOs are making their own capacity building program. And they asked why we're not all inside the capacity building working group. My reply was that I didn't want the people feel that I want to have, and that this working group wants to have everything under their control. But I really understand their concern, and I share it. It is not normal that we have a capacity building structure in at large, and that we do capacity building elsewhere. We can do anything the RALO wants. The RALO can define the topic, the time, the program even, everything, and we can execute it, we can do it for the RALO, so that everything, so that we don't duplicate effort, so that we don't do the things twice or three times. This is, I think this is more intelligent. That's why we put it on the agenda today, and we wanted to discuss it with the RALOs and with people in charge of capacity building in the RALO. So please take the floor and speak up. Who wants to speak? Yes, go ahead, Maureen, please. Maureen?
Hi, Tajani, can you hear me?
I hear you very well.
Okay, thank you. Just to discussing this particular issue, I think that one of the things, for example, with AP RALO, we have a partnership with the APAC Hub, and this is Quick and his team. And one of the things we did an evaluation last year or a couple of years ago, where we looked at how the APAC Hub could assist AP RALO in first of all, we looked at what were the concerns of AP RALO first off, and one of the things was capacity building. And so as a region, the hub has actually sort of like worked in with AP RALO to look at capacity building that is targeted towards our region. Now, I can see your point about the fact that there isn't any sort of like coordination with the capacity building program that we have set up, but the Asia Pacific Hub has has a good team already set up, and they are sort of like putting together a program that is actually in conjunction with the RALO, and I'm sure other RALOs are doing something similar, I think that there probably does need to be some coordination. It's just that I don't know if this is the group that should be organising the training, the capacity building training that we are actually sort of like getting. I don't know. I guess there's probably a little bit of a conflict between what the role is of the hub, and how they in any capacity building they do in those you know, they do on our behalf as a region and this group. So some feedback, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Maureen. Is there any other comment before I... So, Maureen, very good. I understood very good the issue. But I think that this doesn't prevent the coordination. This doesn't prevent the work in the structure. Means that when the EPIRALO identify a need for capacity building for their region, a specific program or specific session of capacity building for this region, they may ask capacity building working group to do it. And they can also define the time when they want it to be done. They can, if they want to be more involved in the definition of the details, they may also propose a program. They may propose the tools to be used. And everything will be done together inside the capacity building working group. And people who are in charge of capacity building in the RALO have to integrate the capacity building working group so that the work will be one work. We all work together. And this has an advantage so that the experience of one RALO can be shared with the other RALOs through the capacity building working group. So I think that there is only benefit to have all the capacity building activities go through the capacity building working group rather than do it separately from the RALO alone. This is my point of view, and I ask you to give your... Maureen, you still have your hand up, so please stay with us.
Thank you, Tijani. Maureen, for the record. I think what I was trying to say was is probably reaching into your next item, which was to do with outreach for better attendance. I think that when we were looking at our capacity building for APRALO, for example, we were looking at the Asia Pacific, specifically the Asian area, because that's the larger area, of course. But the Asia Pacific area, in that we needed to look at ways in which we could build capacity within the region. Now, I do, however, understand what you're saying about the coordination, and that perhaps there should have been some sort of like feedback back to the capacity building working group about what was being proposed and to coordinate it. But at the same time, I do not think that taking it away from the Asia Pacific Hub, which is specifically set up to cater for the needs of the Asia Pacific region. So we need to define what are the roles between what they do for capacity building and what are the roles that we do for capacity building. So perhaps there needs to be some clarification there of the definitions of who's in charge of what. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Maureen. And let me tell you that specific region, it was done for APRALO. Specific region may have a specific training for the specific population. Not for the all people, only for their population. Perhaps because we are using their language, or perhaps because it is a topic that is really specific for this region, can be done also through the capacity building program. So I am not pushing to make it done, but I am explaining, I am trying to explain the issue, how it was raised and why it was raised. Now, if the railroad decide to stay alone and do their capacity building activities alone, it's their affair. I will not complain or say, no, you don't have the right. No, you can do whatever you want, where you want, and as you want. But if we want to be effective and efficient, I think that the right way to do it is to do it through the capacity building. Is there any other point of view about that? From the other region, from LAC region, for example, because I know that Lacralou has also capacity building activity. I don't see any hands. Okay, so since there is no other hand, I will go to the next point. And recording that there wasn't interaction inside the group. Only Maureen gave the point of view of the AP region, and there was discussion. I hope that in the future we will have better, better harmonization of the capacity building activities in. At large, if the capacity building working group is useless, we will terminate it. It's not important to have a capacity building working group if the capacity building is done elsewhere. So this is the discussion. We started the discussion, and if there is any other feedback, it will be on the list now. Okay. Yes, as Heidi said, a combining tools could be developed also. Okay, now we will go to 3E, I think. 3E, yes. Outreach for better attendance. We said in Buenos Aires, the attendance was a little bit poor. It wasn't catastrophic, but it wasn't good. And some regions are better than others. The worst one was the Jura portion. I hope that in the future it will be better. Why I put this point on the agenda? Because I want the RALU leadership, the RALU leaders, try to find why people are not interested in the program that they set themselves. We choose the topic according to their wishes. Why they are not interested? Is there anything to do to make them more interested? Perhaps they may, perhaps it is the time, but they have to speak up. They have to say, we make the choice of two times that are the best for the whole world. So if it is not fiction, this effort, if there is other suggestions, yes, please give them. We need your suggestions, we need your feedback, because we need you to participate. If we do a program and people don't participate, it is useless. So this is to make the RALUs, make the sufficient outreach, or perhaps tell us what is to be done to make the attendance better in the future. So, is there any remark on this issue? See, any hand? So, we will send mails to all the RALUs, and we will repeat what I just said. Please tell us if there is something to make the attendance better, and if not, please make the necessary outreach that people participate in this program. So, now we finished the 3E. The F is completing the 2000 program, and this is something that we together. So, the topics proposed for capacity building are not set yet. We launched before Buenos Aires a call for suggestions, for propositions. We didn't receive any. Now, this is the second time that I ask you to participate in the determination and definition of the topics to be addressed in the capacity building for the remaining time of this year. we will give till the end of this month to all people. We will send emails to all the authorities and ask people to give us what are their interests, what are the topics they need capacity building on for the 2016 remaining time. And at the end of August, we will define the topics that will be addressed. This is the first thing. The second thing, we will try to work with Jeff and his team to make capacity building sessions more attractive. And I will see with him, we'll see together how, what can we do. We propose some way to work, but we will on the ground together. And I hope that the next part of the program will be more attended and more public for the ALS, our ALS. Also, Glenn will send us what kind of tools, because he proposed in Buenos Aires new tools. He will send us with detail the tools he will propose. Perhaps we will try to make use of them to make is there any remark, any question about that? Any? Okay, so we'll go to item number 4, which is the next step. And here we have first starting date, when we start our capacity building program. My proposal is to be at the beginning of September. So we'd like to make it at the first week of September. What is your purpose? Do you have any preference? Is it too early? Is it too late? No reaction. Okay. So we will try to begin at the first week of September. Second point is the online evaluation sheet, and here our very good friend she proposed me to make an online evaluation sheet, and we worked on it, but we didn't finish, so we will continue and work with her so that the online evaluation sheet will be ready for the beginning of September. This online evaluation sheet, what feedback from what is, how do we feel now? How do they see this capacity building program, and to see what are the suggestions from the teams about it's about the time, about the trainer, everything. So it is we will try to have it to, I think, Ariel will do. She already started, she already did something, but we didn't finish, so we'll see. Okay. Any other business? I have one point in any other business. There was a suggestion that we have a liaison with the outreach and engagement subcommittee. And I think this is a good thing. Since outreach is more or less capacity building, and since outreach and engagement, they try to work on the strategy for the at-large engagement. And I think that capacity building can be one of the issues that may help for engagement. So my point of view is to appoint someone to be our liaison with this subcommittee. Yes, Maureen, please.
Thank you, Tijani. Just on the outreach and engagement subcommittee, I think that when we've been looking at the outreach and engagement, we've been looking at outreach as going out into the community, and engagement being looking more at the inreach sort of like activities. And I see the engagement part as being very much capacity building, and sort of like, you know, we're looking at, where you've got outreach for better attendance, it's really inreach. I see it more as inreach, because what we're actually doing with inreach is actually working on developing more engagement with people who are supposed to be engaged with us anyway, and enhancing that. So I think it's really important that we have someone from this group liaising with the outreach and engagement, because that group can also contribute to the development of the capacity building program as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Maureen. So another positive point of view. Any other feedback? So let me ask you, if you are for sending a liaison to the outreach and engagement subcommittee, please put a green tick. If you don't agree, put a red cross.
Jan, this is Maureen, for the record. What are you actually asking? Are you...
I am asking if you agree that we send someone as a liaison to the outreach and engagement subcommittee. This is the question. Maureen, do you hear me? Maureen, do you hear me?
Yes, I agree.
Okay. Green tick. No red cross. So we will send someone. Is there any candidate who wants to be the liaison? So we will do it on the list, since now there is a lot of people who are absent. And I don't see that there is any reaction in the group. So we'll try to do it on the list. Yes, if Maureen wants to be the liaison, I will be glad to accept that. But if there is no candidate on the list, we'll do it.
Tijani, this is Heidi, if I may. Just to make sure that everyone is clear, the Outreach and Engagement Subcommittee agreed that Maureen would be the liaison to the Capacity Building Working Group, given that she was on both. So I thought that meant that she was going to be the liaison both ways. So if people agree that Maureen could be the liaison, then she would be the person who would be reporting on the work to both groups.
Thank you very much, Heidi. I didn't know that she was already appointed by the subcommittee. So if she is appointed from there, it will be our interest to have her in the other way also. So if Maureen agrees, yes, please. Maureen, go ahead. Maureen?
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Tijani. Yes, I agree with you that I am on the are already on the Outreach and Engagement Subcommittee and did agree to be the liaison person for this, for their committee, subcommittee on this committee. However, I sort of like think it's a good idea to actually have someone from this committee to liaise with the other and to report back to the capacity building program. We have liaisons, as Ron and I, for example, with CCNSO. I represent ALAC, he represents CCNSO. And I think that the liaison could be, and it just involves two people. It means that there's going to be two people attending these meetings. I think that, Glenn's, is already on the subcommittee, and so we could share some of that responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Maureen. Thank you. Okay, I do understand your point. So we will make a call for nomination for people to be agent from this capacity building group to the subcommittee on outreach and engagement, so that we will have one from each part, and they can share the load, they can work together. It will be something good. And anyway, we have Maureen, who is on both structure and who can lead. But if we have another one, it will be good too. You are right, Maureen. Thank you. So action item, send a call for nomination to for the agent. Is there any other remark about this point? If not, I ask you if there is any other the other business. No, any other business? Okay. So if there is not, thank you very much. We are on the hour, 3 minutes left. Thank you for this call. It wasn't very, there was a
hello?
Lot of participation. But yes. Yes, who wants to speak?
Vanda? Hello, Vanda?
Welcome, Vanda, yes.
How are you?
Go ahead.
Vanda?
Yes.
Vanda, I think you are joining the meeting strategy call, and it's on 3535.
Ah, okay, sorry.
Not at all.
Okay, thank you, Vanda. So, if there is no other thing to say, I will thank you all, and we have recorded everything, all the points, all the action items, and we try to work from the starting the next week, so that at the beginning of September we try to begin our program for the remaining time of the conference team. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you, staff. Thank you, we don't have interpreters. Thank you, staff. Thank you, Heidi, Isla, and thank you, Adam. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. The meeting has been adjourned, and the audio will now be disconnected. Thank you for joining today's call.